This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back in. It's Sharp Money here on VSIN. I'm Jeff Parles. Amal Shah is alongside Ortegas here as well in for Dustin Sweetelson. And now with us, the Sports Betting Hall of Famer himself. I feel like I haven't seen you in forever.
Where have you been? You had the longest honeymoon ever.
I was mostly at summer, mostly at Circa now.
So I told you the way to, you know, again, newlywed, just remember this. I'm married 36 years. Every day is a honeymoon, honey. Just that'll get you through. Trust me when I tell you. It's the safest play you're going to make.
By the way, I'm hoping Mrs. M is watching. By the way, didn't you say 37 during the break?
I probably did, but it's 36, 37. But then you get, once you get past 30, you got to pass. It's like you could start naming, you know, just don't go below 30. It's a very fluid number.
That voice is, of course, Vinny Malaiulo with us right now.
Amal loves Mrs. M. She loves him. I got to tell you.
Vinny, so there's no events today. So
the NBA Summer League.
Okay.
Here in town.
Other than the Summer League.
Yeah,
that's the only thing going on. Which begs the question, why are you working today?
Well, there's always something to do, right? I mean, usually you have to be at Chris Andrews on vacation. I think he's back. He'll be back this weekend. But there's always something to do. You know, you bring up a good point. By now, I'd be scoping out workouts at Del Mar, which starts a week from tomorrow. Of course, Saratoga started today. But you want to get ahead of things and keep track of any other free agent signings. Look at futures. Try to handicap. Try to get a handle on who's going to be a seller and who's going to be buyers at the trade deadline for baseball, right? And the reason we would do that on our side of the counter is to try to, you know, gauge how we're going to offset liability on some teams, like the Orioles, like the Reds. I mean, they're obviously playoff contenders. So, I know when Chrissy gets back, we'll work on some games of the year and things like that and some other props. So there's always something to do. I mean, It's mainly look ahead mode, though.
And right now it's kind of a slow time, obviously, as Jeff just alluded to. You got a great Joe Louis related story. And I say that because it's not actually Joe Louis, but a story that took place at Caesar's Palace. You were at Caesar's for a long time.
Yeah.
Kind of enlighten people with this story here with the Joe Louis story.
So I know, Amal, this will be a bit redundant to you, but being that you brought it up, you must have enjoyed it.
I did.
So Joe Louis, legendary boxer, arguably the greatest of all time. You can make a case for it. And Joe Louis actually worked at Caesar's Palace in the latter part of his life. He was a greeter.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay.
And in fact, he was his wake was at Caesar's Palace in the pavilion that was out back. There was a pavilion out back. It's no longer there at Caesar's Palace. There was a pavilion out back where, when we did have a major fight, sometimes the fights took place in the pavilion, held several thousand people, but that's where the workouts took place, and Joe Louis was laid to rest there. Well, as a tribute to Joe Louis and his time, particularly at Caesar's Palace, there was a marble statue created, and it was placed in the sports book, solid marble.
Yeah.
Right, life size. Had to weigh a ton. In fact, we couldn't just move it during renovations. We had to make sure that it was over a portion of the property that had a slab and not a basement for fear of it literally, you know, creating a hole and falling through. So, in fact, now Brian Ortega, you said you recently saw the statue. It's moved since I was there. I left there, quite a while.
I think it moved over near like the nightclub area. There's like a pillar, and they put it in front of the pillar because it used to be in front of Bobby.
So several stories about Joe Louis, the statue, and again, a nice man too. Got to meet him. What a gentleman. The Joe Louis record has an asterisk next to it, as far as I'm concerned, right? Parlay. I know you're looking up Joe Louis record. Pull it up there, and you can let the folks know what it is. And I can tell you that as we speak, it has the it is subject to change. Now, what would happen is, at the time when I was there, the statue was posed where Joe's in his boxing stance, and he had his one of his, I think it was his left hand extended. And people would take pictures with the statue, okay, all the time. Well, every now and then, and especially during when we had a fight at Caesar's Palace, people would start to spar with the solid marble statue.
Guys
would
try always to, smart thing to do.
Oh, brilliant! Right, I saw guys break their hand on a body shot. I took a jab. You know, one guy tried. He was trying to be like it was the 15th round. Because I asked him after, right? Because he touched gloves. You know, they touched gloves in the 15th round. Going at the time, 15th round. Now the 12th round. You know. And he goes up like this, and so I'm like, what the hell are you thinking? He goes, yeah. Well, you know, I was making a sportsman gesture. Yeah, how's your hand feel? So we had I think it was the first Chavez de la Hoya fight, and there was a couple of guys out there, and I'm at the counter, and I'm looking, and I see a guy, he's got his arm around the champ, and his buddy's taking a picture of him, and he's smiling, and So now the guy in the picture turns and he starts to shadow box with the Joe Louis
statue. The marble statue, yeah.
Right? And not only is he just kind of throwing punches, but he's bobbing and weaving, right? Well, he bobs down one time. He comes straight up. Joe's extended glove catches him right on the top of the head.
See you later.
Bam, down he goes. He's down.
Right? Down for the count.
Down, out, immediately. This guy is down. Knees buckle, he's sprawled out. Now, you got to picture this. This is the night of a fight. We got 16,000 people going to the arena outside. This guy's laid out, and his buddy is hysterical laughing. Okay? He's got the little 110. Remember the old 110 cameras, the little thing? This buddy is cracking up, and they were both Hispanic. And the reason I noticed is because I know the guy is out. His buddy thinks he's kidding. I said, call security, get the paramedics up here. I go out, and his buddy is his lady goes, and his buddy now starts playing referee, and he's counting them out. Seis, siete. Oh. He's counting them out, right? And then now the guy's still laying. He's out completely. He is like, now his buddy's, he's going, Juan, what? What? He gets down to, and he's trying to revive. He's complete. I mean, he's now. I'm like, oh, this is not. So here come the paramedics. Now the guy's coming too. They give him the smelling salt and everything like that. So I go home that night. And there was a local place here in town where after the fights, all bookmakers and reporters would get together and just, you know, kind of reminisce and recount the night. So I'm telling the story. Great writer. For years here in Las Vegas. He still writes. He freelances. He was writing for the Las Vegas Review Journal at the time. John L. Smith. He hears the story. He dies laughing. A couple of days later in the RJ, here's the headline. Brown Bomber still K-wing the Palookas. So, in fact, Dan Chandler was a legendary host here in town. Dan Chandler, son of former Kentucky Governor Happy Chandler. I worked with him at Caesars. He was a great host. What a terrific, terrific casino guy. And he heard the story, and I think he put it in his book.
An old-timer.
So, I mean, it's gotten so much mileage. Parlay, what do you see? What do they have? What's printed, please, for the
printed
for the record?
Joe Louis record is 66-3, 52 wins by knockout.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. That's 66, bet the over, all right? And the same with the KOs, because Joe's still knocking them out right now to this day. Now, obviously, there's not as many great fights there and everything like that, but it was and every time there was a fight, but there would always be something. And you think, like,
what is wrong with people?
And so another time, what we eventually had to do was because it was – again, you want to take pictures, that's one thing, but for your own safety, just it's solid marble. What do you think? So we put the felt ropes up around it, okay? It didn't matter.
Oh, of course.
I mean, I told one, because people would just go underneath or move the ropes. I'm like, what do you think? The ropes are there to keep Joe in? Like, what are you doing? Like,
hey, Vinny, I have a quick question for you before you run off here. So can you explain to people what Fight Night in Vegas used to be like for boxing? Because it's not quite the same like it used to be, but just what the feeling was like. Because my dad always, I used to work boxing events, like when I used to be a concierge. He's like, oh, are you excited to be there? I'm like, no, because it's just not that fun. But what do you, what
you know, Brian, and again, I'm not going to take away from anything that that anybody does today, right? Everybody puts their best efforts into it. UFC, you know, exciting cards and everything. But I've got to tell you, it was a special time because if it wasn't the heavyweights, it was the middleweights and the welterweights there's a great documentary that ESPN did of Four Kings, right? Yeah. And, talked about Marvin Hagler, Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns, and Roberto Duran. If you haven't seen it, I've got a couple of stories about those fights too. But the thing about it was Las Vegas, it made Las Vegas the center of the sports world at that time because for the fight. And the energy not only transcended the property, in our case at Caesars, it transcended the city. You would get in a cab, wherever you were, a restaurant, it didn't matter. I mean, it was just phenomenal.
Still the best sporting event I've ever been to, 97 Tyson Holyfield at the MGM Grand Garden. First of all, there's nothing like when you get the intro and you're like, MGM Grand Garden Arena. I'm going to tell you, Brian, there was a electricity that was palpable in there. And by the way, the best part was, I remember a friend of mine, there was 12 of us, and he sees Terry Porter walking by. He goes, Terry Porter, and he's like, he was so excited somebody actually recognized him.
Yep. Vinny, pleasure as always.
We'll do some more.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSIN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and plenty more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, ROI, and to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. 4 VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for $19 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back in. It's Sharp Money. I'm Jeff Parles. I'm Amal Shaw here. Brian Ortega's here. I've never heard that story from Vinny before.
Yeah.
I've heard plenty of great ones from Vinny. But getting knocked out by a marble statue is pretty impressive, Amal.
Well,
it's pretty impressive.
You know, it's funny. When you talk about boxing, we didn't even get into it. Vinny's got so many great stories. I'm a big boxing fan. Yeah. And so there's one we'll have to have him tell next time where literally, I forgot which fight it was, he's under the ring. There was a fight.
It was one of the big fights in the 80s that was a draw.
Draw, exactly.
Yeah.
And, it was crazy. He's got some of the greatest stories ever.
I'm also reading up on, boxing a lot better than I do. I'm reading up on the Bo Holyfield fight that he was mentioning with the fan. Could you imagine something like that happening today?
Oh, the guy would not get that close. Unfortunately, he'd get hit by sniper fire at this point in time.
I mean, it just...
It's crazy.
Crazy, crazy stuff.
Well, remember, those fights were out in front of Caesar's Palace.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Yeah, is that where that big? Because there was a parking lot.
Well, it was the old parking lot, right, Amal?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So
then they had it in the pool area, didn't they, for a while? Like, well, where the pool is now, that's where the Pavilion used to be.
I don't know where the pool is now, but
it's in the center. It's in right in the middle of Caesar's Palace. I stayed there when I went to go see Adele. No big deal. I have to say, their pool is fantastic at Caesar's Palace. I have to say, it's
one of the better pools on the Strip.
What's that?
One of the better pools on the Strip.
Oh, it's the best pool on the Strip. Like, has multiple pools for adults, kids. It has a giant circular pool, which is great. And it also still has swim up blackjack, which is fantastic.
They still do that? They used to have it all over the town. Now, not as much.
Minimal. It's tables outside of the pool. usually now.
Yeah, usually outside of the pool. But
Golden Nugget still has to swim up.
Yeah, now they're just looking for people to play blackjack in general.
Yes, exactly.
Well, stop giving people 6-5 odds instead of 3-2
on
the blackjack,
terrible?
Right?
So I was at Bellagio last night. We won't talk about what a bad night it was. But I was standing there watching $25 blackjack. Well, it had $15, but it's $25, six decks, continuous shuffle, 6-5.
It's brutal.
At Bellagio.
It's brutal. It's brutal.
First of all, the 6-5 switch, excuse me, from 3-2. I mean, how many hands of blackjack are you paying out that you think it's that much of a difference where you want to do that?
Right.
I mean, to me, it's not even something that you can genuinely really quantify. It's not like, what is the pit boss in there going, well, we got 7 blackjacks here in the last 10 minutes. I mean,
they're just squeezing you. And then what are your feelings on, this is like really like into casino talk now. What are your feelings on crapless craps tables? Because that's becoming...
What does that mean?
Crapless craps? Have you ever played craps before?
I don't know how, no.
Oh, no. So, sorry. So, Jeff...
By the way, I'm glad you didn't ask me that with Vinny here.
I should have asked
offended.
That question. Then
you should have. I've never played crapless craps.
Okay, so for everybody out there who knows about craps, you have, you know, all the numbers. You know, you have the points, which are 4-10. Obviously, we don't have a 7 as one of the possible points. But now, which the only place that used to do it was the Stratosphere and the Las Vegas Club, which is where Circa now sits, they had crapless craps tables where a possible points were now 2, 3, and 12, and 11 as well. So it adds those as possible points you can hit, which pay out huge numbers like 6-1 and I think 8-1 or something, huge numbers. But you guys don't play craps as much as I do because I love to play craps. But they've added those to a lot of places, including the Bellagio, which to me feels like lower class, but they've become super popular around town. And I think that's another way for them to get an edge, kind of like adding 6-5 and continuous shuffle.
Plus, it's got to be a fixed payout, right, almost?
Yeah, so it's like a weirder, it's a different payout that I'm not familiar with, but it's usually like 6-1, which is a huge number in terms of... It's a fixed payout. Yeah, exactly.
I don't even remember the last time I played craps.
Yeah, sorry, I got really the numbers there.
It's okay. You're good. I'm trying to. I guess I played at the Bachelor Party in March. I guess that was the last time I played craps. Played down Fremont. I might have actually played at the Fremont.
How'd you feel about that? They have a little number there. They have a number thing that actually tells you what number they're on, what point.
Yes, I did not do well in that game. That's all I know.
So speaking of downtown,
yes,
they had that All-Star Invitational thing where it's the blackjack deal.
Yes, yes.
And
Mike and Derek's All-Star Invitational.
Yeah.
Amal, you were in this last year for the NFL Futures, right?
I was, yeah.
Well, who did you end up on? You were in the middle of the pack in the draft.
No, I wound up with the Buccaneers because I was like 7th or 6th, and I remember.
So you're the back end of it.
Yeah, I lost on the last hand. I had an 11, and I got like a 4, and the dealer, of course, made whatever, 17-21. But if not, I would have had a top 3 pick, and I was gonna either take Philadelphia or Kansas City, and depending on kind of how it played out.
So... You know, so this go around, there it is on the screen if you're watching it. The top pick was the Braves, which makes a whole lot of sense.
Sure.
Houston, our own Mitch Moss picked the Astros next, 12-1. The Rangers went off the board third at 11-1. Dodgers plus 750 off the board fourth from our own Matt Humans. Paulie Howard took the Orioles fifth at 16-1. The Rays went sixth at 6-1. I don't know what Jacob Wittenberg was doing with the Angels at seventh at 100-1.
Wow.
Marlins next at 22-1. Blue Jays at just shy of 18-1 at 35-2. We're doing fractions, and then the Reds were final at 45-1. You know, Amal, if I was just going through, like, if I was in this and had an option to do this and I was picking at the back end, I'm stunned the Phillies were not selected in this. Because the Phillies, to me, are the team in the NL that I think actually is the best shot of beating Atlanta in a playoff series.
Why do you say that? Because you've got Nola and Wheeler?
I think their bullpen is one of the top 3 bullpens in baseball.
Right.
My biggest concern in their bullpen is actually their closer, who is Kimbrel, who, of course, closed out the All-Star game for the National League. I do have questions about Aaron Nola, who has been all over the place this year. But I like Zach Wheeler as their top-notch. Is it the legit number one starter?
Yeah.
And look, the big questions out of Philly has been the consistency with their lineup because Turner has struggled in his first year there. Harper seemingly is not all the way back from the Tommy John and may not be all the way back this year. But I think the Phillies actually match up as well as anyone against Atlanta. That's why I think that would have been, if I was picking at the end, once Tampa went off the board at 6-1, I would have taken Philadelphia over all those bottom four teams that were selected in this.
Once Tampa went over the Angels Mariners, by the way, the Angels pick, I don't even understand, but so it was 100-1 on a $3,000 bet. So he wins what? $300,000. I think that's why he took the shot on that one.
There are better bloated numbers than that.
Yeah.
I would rather have the Padres. I'd rather even have the Mets at that number. Seattle. I'd rather have Seattle at a number like that, who's technically a game ahead of them.
I mean, it's interesting. The Angels are a team that's not even going to make the playoffs out of all these teams selected here.
I don't think the Angels and the Marlins are making the playoffs. I think the
Marlins are definitely getting in.
You think they're definitely getting in?
Oh, absolutely. They got a 3-game lead in the wild card right now. You've got five teams in contention. I mean, the Padres, look, them making the postseason is not based on my suggestion on the Marlins being a team to falter. This team can't hit. They still continue to win baseball games. Sandy Alcantara has not had a great first half of the season. They're sitting right now at 53-39. They've got a 3-game lead in the wild card. The Phillies and the Brewers. The Brewers are anemic. So for me, I think Miami's a live team to get in the postseason.
Marlins, I still think they're team lockbox them all, where they have this prolific record in one-run games. They've been phenomenal in that. They have no offense. But then you go on the other side, if maybe the offense gets a little better in the second half. Alcantara has been dreadful in this first half.
Right.
They've gotten some really good pitching from their left-handed starters.
Right.
Garrett has pitched above what I would have expected. Lizardo, look, we always knew the talent was there with Jesus Lizardo, and Lizardo has shown it so far this year. He's been excellent
right. For
Miami. Again, at least one of the three teams in the NL wildcard slots right now are Miami, Arizona, and San Francisco. At least one of them is missing. And I wouldn't be shocked if two end up missing. Now that would take a run from San Diego in order to pull one of those teams out.
Yeah.
But I think Miami is the most likely of the three to fall out completely, even with a 3-game lead over Philadelphia.
I can appreciate what you're saying, but I think some credit has to be given to this team for how well they've played. I actually think the Arizona Diamondbacks have a greater chance to slip up, even though Zach Allen's been tremendous, could win the Cy Young. Miami plays baseball in terms of trying to win and in terms of by defense and pitching. I think that generally tends to be a more effective method over the course of a season. We'll see what happens, though.
The whole second half gets rolling tomorrow. By the way, I know the Padres and Phillies are playing four. Why did they do a scheduled doubleheader on Saturday?
It might be a makeup game.
They haven't played each other yet this year, though.
Then I don't know.
Very strange. I wonder if that was supposed to be today, and they're like, no, we're not putting any games on Thursday.
No idea.
That has to be the only thing that would have made any sense on that. We're going to go back to the National Football League next. Look at the top-end teams in the NFL here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw. VSIN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus instantly. Use promo code VSIN when you sign up today. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. Welcome back in. I'm Jeff Parles. I'm Amal Shaw here as well. Brian Ortega alongside. We have an intruder in the studio, man, with the forgetting his IFB. Maolia, what are we doing? No, it's been again, if you missed it, make sure you check out the story from the top of this hour with Vinny, one of the classics over the days in Caesar's Palace. All right, Amal, let's go to the NFL. So let's look at the top of the league here.
Okay.
So I said to you earlier this week that I think Cincinnati is the most complete team in the NFL. They're my Super Bowl pick as of the moment. Burrow is the second best player in the league. Only Mahomes is better. They have the best defensive coordinator to me in Amaruno, and they were able to keep him around as Arizona decided to hire Jonathan Gannon as their head coach.
Yeah.
So even with all that said, their win total, I think, is a little aggressive with their schedule in their division, which is 11.5, which is tied for the highest in the league. Philadelphia, Kansas City also have 11.5, along with Cincinnati, plus 110 on the over for the 11.5. Now, the Bengals last year did go over. Remember, they had the cancellation of the Buffalo game. And they still went 12-4 in 16 games. So they still went over. When remember, a schedule where everyone said last year, oh, they're going to struggle. Or they better get their wins early on because the back end of their schedule is really difficult. They start 0-2. They still end up with 12 wins.
Yeah, and was that, I mean, a team they played at Dallas, I think, and, you know, had a rough start to the season, as you alluded to. But this team just seems to really hit their stride as the season progresses. Remember, they're 3-1 against Kansas City in the last four matchups over the last 2 years. So I think the Bengals, and rightfully so here in our pro football betting guide at VSiN, we saw a lot of the people pick the Bengals to win the Super Bowl. Jeff, where are you with the Bengals?
75% of the 20
yeah.
of our experts that were polled picked Cincinnati to win the Super Bowl. They are my pick as well. Because I thought the winner of the AFC Championship game last year was beating Philadelphia. It ended up playing out that way.
Yeah.
With Kansas City beating them by a field goal late. Obviously, we could talk about the hold until we're blue in the face, but it happened. Cincinnati, to me, is just one of those teams now where I think the markets have them and Buffalo reversed for what they should be.
Okay.
Where Buffalo, right now, also a team with 11.5 on a win total.
Right.
Buffalo is 9-1 to win it all. Cincinnati is 11-1 to win it all at DK.
Yeah.
The division odds. Buffalo, in a division that you think is harder than the AFC North, mm-hmm. I think it's really close. I think the North is slightly better because top to bottom, it's better than the East. Buffalo's plus 120 to win the AFC East. Cincinnati's plus 150 to win the AFC North. And I think Miami and the Jets are better than any of the other teams in the AFC North. I just think everyone else is much better than New England, and I think Buffalo is significantly weaker than Cincinnati. So I don't understand. Now, look, 11.5 is aggressive. I don't want to bet the over. I'd much rather have a plus 150 win the AFC North ticket on Cincinnati than an over 11.5 because 11-6 might get the job done in that division. But I still think for a team that is the fifth favorite to win it all, the third favorite in the AFC, I think Cincinnati is still disrespected in the marketplace in most of these markets.
I don't disagree with you. I still don't understand how they're the third betting favorite in the AFC. I think they should be second.
Correct.
And I understand Kansas City, why they're there. But I can make an argument for Cincinnati being right there with the Chiefs at this point in time. Look, the late hit penalty kind of changed the dynamics of the game. At the end of the day, I thought Cincinnati's had a couple of tough calls go against them over the last two seasons. The Bengals, to me, this is the time to win, right? Joe Burrow is entering his fourth year. You've got an opportunity to really get this team in the right position with a chance to win without him having that huge contract. And then you're going to have Jamar Chase in a similar situation in a couple of years. So this is kind of a must-win now situation for the Bengals.
Like you said, the contracts are going to start really loading up now. And again, I think you're not getting a ball. You should not be, at least to me, Cincinnati and Kansas City and Cincinnati are the two best teams in the NFL to me. I don't think there's much, at least in my opinion, I don't think there should be much of a debate
right
at this point with those two, whatever order you want to put. If you think Kansas City's better because of 15, no problem with that.
Right.
No problem with that whatsoever, even though I think Cincinnati's roster as a whole is better than Kansas City. As much as I like Burrow, Mahomes is still the king of the dance here until further notice. But I think Cincinnati is still very much disrespected as a team that should be looked at as the second best team in the NFL with the fifth longest odds in the league. Let's go to your Niners. Let's go to the Niners here,
yep.
Amal, who are 10-1 to win it all. Betting favorites in the NFC West, minus 160 to win the West. Regular season win total, as we know, for the Niners, high yet again at 10.5, minus 120 on the over. Amal, again, this just all comes down to what type of quarterback player we're getting out of this team. I know you like them to steamroll through the West yet again, though.
Look, they dominated a weaker division. Seattle won four games against Arizona and the Rams. Those were bad teams. They dominated the three matchups against, at least five of the six halves against the Seattle Seahawks. Everyone keeps questioning the quarterback position. Purdy was solid, but let's not act like Brock Purdy was Joe Montana. The talent on this team, minus the quarterback position, is the best in the National Football League, and it's not even close. When you look at from the offensive standpoint, Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel, Trent Williams, you can make an argument all three of these guys are as good as anybody at their positions. Defensively, you look at Fred Warner, who I love, Nick Bosa. You add in Hargrave in the middle there. This team is going to be really, really good. Eric Armstead will be healthy. I'm telling you right now, with this schedule, they're at the Steelers, at the Rams, Giants at home, Cardinals, and Cowboys at home. They got a chance to get off to a great 5-0 start. They do have the Bengals later on. They do play at Philadelphia, which could be crucial for determining home field advantage. But I think this team's in a great position. Their season win total is set at 10.5. That's a joke to me. I think the Niners have a chance to go 14-3. They've got an opportunity to have a great year here.
Even with the concerns at quarterback, it looks like Darnold's going to be the starter from the get-go here. The lack of trust in Trey Lance, I think it's completely justified. And Amal, look, if Purdy were healthy, it would be his job. Like, let's just be real. It would be his job. But because of the UCL tear, he's probably not even going to be ready for the first month.
No, you're absolutely right about that. Who was the backup? Was it Johnson in the back?
Josh Johnson, who came in and the game completely melted.
Josh Johnson's a journeyman just hanging on for a job. But the reality of it is, if you have Brock Purdy, Sam Darnold, Trey Lance, Jimmy Garoppolo, whomever it may be, maybe Trey Lance right now at the bottom of that rung, but remember, his mobility presents some problems. Any one of these three or four guys, obviously Jimmy's moved on to the Raiders, but my point is, I think you can put a plethora of different guys under center for the 49ers. They got a chance. All you have to do is not turn the ball over and make a few throws a game. I didn't even mention Brandon Ayuk. How do I even forget George Kittle? I mean, like, it's insanity when you sit there and you look at these guys on this roster. And to me, this team just needs a quarterback. It's like the old Trent Dilfer line that Shannon Sharpe said. Trent, Johnny Unitas, you are not. Just don't screw it up. That's all you have to do. It's like drive the car. Don't crash it. Just park it in a field where you're not even by anybody so there's no scratches or dents on the car. And that's what the 49ers are. This team stays healthy. As good and talented as Philadelphia is, I still think the 49ers are a little bit healthier, a little bit more talented team.
Again, the advantage for Philadelphia. Well, you know the one thing with Philly, though? I will bring this up. Even though I think Philly's going to end up coming out of the NFC again.
Mm-hmm.
There is a question mark. Even though I know people don't want to hear it, there is a question mark of if Jalen Hurts, what we saw last year, was a mirage or is that what he is? I lean towards that it probably is what he is.
Yep.
And I was wrong. I thought Jalen Hurts was a backup quarterback.
So did I.
I thought he was a guy that we saw in the playoff game against Tampa 2 years ago. All right, once the going really gets tough and he plays a real defense, he stinks. Super Bowl changed that for me. What we saw through the whole regular season where he was the second best player in the league last year, that changed it. But there is that in the little thing in the back of my mind of, well, is he this guy now where he's an elite quarterback and he is one of the top five guys in the league? I'd rather have him long-term than Josh Allen. I don't even think it's a debate at this point because Hurts at least protects the ball. Allen's going to turn the ball over 20 times this year.
Also, look, Josh Allen's a better long-distance runner in terms of getting bigger plays. I tell you right now, Jalen Hurts in a short yardage situation is the best weapon in the National Football League.
As long as that push is legal, he is.
I mean, what?
I hate it.
Hate the push?
I hate to see it.
I don't even understand why Philly doesn't just run that play four straight downs. I'm not even kidding you. Eat the clock. You're not going to stop it. If you have the ball first and goal at the 6-yard line, it should be Jalen Hurts up the middle for four straight plays. They're scoring.
Why doesn't more teams do that? Like, why are you trying to do all, like the Packers? Again, back to the Packers. They're trying to like do all this crazy stuff inside the two. Like once the Packers get inside the two, they're not scoring.
So to your point, I have a certain philosophy. If you have the ball first and go at the 2-yard line, I would run the ball four straight plays. I don't care if I get stopped. There's certain things you just have to be able to accomplish. If you can't, so be it.
One more football to get to wrap things up here on a Thursday edition of Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
It's always football season here at VSIN, which is why we've already released our NFL betting guide. Our NFL betting guide will help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with in-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Become a VSIN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19. Get your digital copy of VSiN's NFL Betting Guide right now, or take advantage of our summer kickoff special and get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $175. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back in. I'm Jeff Parles. It is Sharp Money. I'm Al Shaz alongside Brian Ortega's here as well. Let's go back, stay in the NFL here. Let's stay here because we have two more teams left. Because we talked about the Niners, where I'm all in on the 49ers yet again, even with the questions at quarterback. So let's go to the last team that you had listed, Brian Ortega, which is the New York Jets. And Amal, you have said throughout this show, you are basically the number one Aaron Rodgers supporter at this point.
Correct.
And I understand that the Jets are going to end up being the most polarizing team of any team going into the year. I understand this. They're going to have Hard Knocks. People are going to overreact to what they see on Hard Knocks like they did with the Lions. And guess what? The people ended up being right with what they saw with the Lions last year, even though it was an ugly start for them. But Amal, this feels like something we're going to find out pretty quickly with the Jets. Because their first six games, and if you want to go deeper, 11 of their first 12, or excuse me, 10 of their first 11, I should say, before that, a game in week 13 against Atlanta, where if the Jets get through the first 12 weeks in good shape, they're going to steamroll to the finish with the weakness of the end of their schedule. But Amal, we're going to learn, I think, very quickly in these first 2 weeks, where they play Buffalo in week one on Monday night, and then they play at Dallas in week two. If the Jets do not get swept in these two games, where they are the shortest of underdogs in week one and they're an underdog in week two, which, by the way, I think they should be a favorite against Buffalo personally. If they get through that 2-0, then this is a team that you could say whatever expectations you wanted. I don't think it's crazy. They get out of it 0-2, this thing could spiral out of control pretty quickly because those first weeks pre-bye are really difficult.
No, I would agree with you. I mean, the schedule, the way it shakes out to open the season, we're going to find out where they are very quickly. And you go into 6 weeks, you got Buffalo, Kansas City, Dallas and Philadelphia. You've got, you know, what, four of the premier 6-7 Super Bowl contenders? This is not going to be easy.
So Philadelphia, Amal, if you want fun with numbers here, Philadelphia has lost to the Jets in their existence 0 times.
Yeah.
It's the only matchup in the NFL where a team is still winless against the opponent. And it's not like the Texans that came into the league in 0-2. So the Jets have had a horror show against Philadelphia in their existence. I really do think, and again, the Jets are going to, Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in Jet history, period.
Yep.
Just by talent, it's not close. And if they survive, again, I think they will survive the first 6 weeks. I think getting through the first 6 weeks 3-3 is fine, Amal. You get to the bye week at 500, this schedule really does start to soften that last 6 weeks. You get to the bye week 3-3, they'll be favored over the Giants in the game where technically a Giant home game in MetLife.
Yeah.
They'll be favored against the Chargers in a Monday night game. They'll be favored here in Vegas. Really, they will probably be favored in every one of those games post-bye, except for week 11 in Buffalo. And Amal, in the two games last year against the Jets, Josh Allen struggled horrifically in those games.
Yeah. Hey, you're absolutely right. And I think this team with Aaron Rodgers under center has got a chance, obviously, to be far better offensively. But again, as I said earlier, it helps this team defensively. Look, I don't know how they're going to do it during the regular season. This team gets in the playoffs, I think they're going to be extremely dangerous. And that's where the rubber's going to meet the road. I'm not really worried about the regular season because, as you alluded to, they get out of the first half of the season 3-3. You feel pretty good. I mean, there's not a single game you could point to outside of maybe you're at Denver, so it's not even necessarily an easy game. But there are no easy games on this schedule. It's going to be challenging regardless of how you see it.
Right now, win total 9.5 for New York. Again, last year off to the great start, and then the offense didn't score a touchdown the last 3 weeks of the season. Not going to win many games if you do that. Last three games for the Jets this year, Commanders, Browns, and Patriots.
Jeff, I can't believe you disrespected Chad Pennington like that.
Here's the thing with Pennington.
I'm just joking.
If Pennington was the quarterback in 2009 or 2010, the Jets make the Super Bowl one of those 2 years.
I agree. thought Pennington was a terrific quarterback.
Pennington, whenever Chad Pennington was healthy, the Jets made the playoffs. And they just only, and that went to Miami too. They won the division with Pennington that year he was there.
He was incredibly accurate. And Bill Polian, former great architect of the teams in Indianapolis and the Buffalo Bills, always says the single most important criteria for him at quarterback is accuracy. And Pennington may not have had the great ideal arm strength, but the accuracy was unbelievable.
No, he was always a winner. When he was healthy, they made the playoffs. That's just what it was. They never made an AFC title game. They should have made it the year where Doug Bryan forgot how to kick field goals against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Roethlisberger's rookie year. The Jets would have got destroyed by New England in the AFC title game that year, but they at least would have been there back in the early 2004.
Can we finish the show with this? We asked in a break earlier, but
go ahead.
We got 4 minutes here.
Yeah, go for it.
We're going to do a patented Brian segment where it has not a lot to do with sports, but
that's good.
A lot to do with betting.
Go ahead.
So what makes a good poker room to you guys? Like, you don't have to say, like, you know, where are the best poker rooms, but what makes a good poker room in the city of Las Vegas, which are now kind of going extinct, but they're still out there.
There's still plenty out there. I will give the floor to our guy, Amal Shah, who is the better poker player on set by a pretty significant margin.
People that look like they may have showered in the last 72 hours.
That's always a plus.
That's about it. I mean, look, your aesthetics and everything else, it depends on your interest and where you want to be. I mean, probably aesthetically, Wynn is probably the best in town, which an Encore. So it just varies based on the room you like. Like, Aria is very popular, but I mean, it looks like there's ever a fire in there. Everybody's getting barbecued.
Yes. It's always so full in there.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. Exactly.
Well, that's the in vogue room.
Is it?
I mean, it just has been.
Well, Aria is just one of those properties as well. Like Aria, the Wynn, those are where the celebrities are going to play. Are going to be at. Like, yeah. Not celebrity poker players, but like celebrities in general.
I mean, there've been plenty of times I've been in the Aria, and Phil Hellmuth is playing in a tournament there. I mean, going to the top of the list there, basically.
These are things that I'm worried about: is the aesthetics and, like, you know, what aesthetic, makes a, I mean, what look, makes a I mean, good
if
poker.
I mean, Brian, if you're just going off aesthetics, it kind of just goes for what the property is as a whole.
Exactly.
I mean, the Wynn Encore to me is the best property in the city. And that means that their room is going to be more elegant and more higher end.
From a customer service standpoint, I would agree with you. I think it's the second best aesthetic property in the city.
What do you think is the best?
M Resort.
Off the board there, Amal Shah.
Off strip, off the board.
I like the M because it's always quiet.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's actually a really nice property. It cost $1 billion to build.
And they're expanding again, by the way. Building a new tower.
They're building a new tower.
They're building a new tower over there.
I had no idea. That's a really nice property.
I would never have guessed that you would have said that. And I agree with you. It's a really nice property. Yeah. You can always get a seat at a table game if you want. I mean, it's a nice place. I still wish they didn't get rid of the buffet, though.
But a lot of people buffet did. Was great. Because the buffet is a lost leader for so many casinos.
Oh, trust me. After the pandemic hit, and we talked about earlier with 6-5 blackjack, anything that helps the casino make more money is going to be in play, and not having those buffets is going to help them have more money in their pocket in the end.
Do you know what I think would help the casinos? And South Point does a great job of this. They don't price gouge their customers. Mm-hmm. Stop trying to extort money from your customers based on pricing.
Look, there's no argument in the way of here. There's a reason this place is always filled.
There's no question.
A reason this place is. It doesn't matter the time of day. It doesn't matter the time of year. This place, especially if you go about 15 paces to the right of us, where we are, where all the table games are, it is always hard to find a seat because people are always gambling there because the prices are as good as anywhere in town.
I was surprised that Ortega mentioned he saw $15 tables at the Bellagio.
I was also surprised myself. Yeah. There was only like two. There was only two.
Yeah, but the auto shufflers and 6-5.
It's all based against you. By the way, there's only three buffets left on the strip. Bellagio.
Four.
Four? Gotcha. Four. Bellagio, Wynn,
Caesars.
Wait,
more than that.
And one more. That's three.
Cosmopolitan's still open.
Yeah, you got it.
Cosmopolitan. I believe.
I have a funny Danny Burke story to tell you before we end here.
Please.
So I was walking around Caesar's Palace, and I was walking to go back from my room to Stanton Social, and guess who I saw standing in line?
Our guy Danny Burke.
Not in the regular line, because he's a high roller. Diamond line. That's a big deal at the Bacchanal Buffet.
Hey, that's what you need. You need to skip the line there.
He looked good, by the way. Really, really good tan on that guy.
That's as good of a place to end the show as anywhere. For Amal Shah, for Brian Ortega, I'm Jeff Parles. This has been Sharp Money. Be some prime time. Tim Murray, Jarrett Smith coming your way next.